I remember as a child growing up on a farm in a small village here in Switzerland, at the lunch and dinner table, my father and my grandfather would often talk about politics, or it just struck me that it was almost always when they were sitting at the table, it was them, you know, who were talking and who were allowed to express strong opinions or talk about other people or judge other people or talk about the daily farm business. And my mother and my grandma, they were more listening, shutting up, asking questions sometimes, or affirming and validating what the men were saying. And I think then as a young child, I've identified much more with my mother's and grandmother's side, and I kind of swore to myself that I would never want to become a man like that, a man who takes up so much space and makes these claims and voices these political opinions all the time. But then, you know, I was, I guess, always a bit of a soft-spoken and more effeminate boy and young man. And nonetheless, I decided to become an artist and a performing artist, and had this wish to be in the limelight and to shine. And I guess as artists, we tend sometimes also to mistake the platforms and the opportunities that we are given, and to mistake those things for our merit and our talent. And I'm sure that, you know, some of that, when I started to have my first small successes as a choreography student in Amsterdam at the School for New Dance Development, some of that was also maybe more easy or more accessible to me because I was a male student from Switzerland, a male white student from Switzerland who was somehow encouraged and pushed. And then it became even more striking, like this kind of heightened position or this privilege and this authority I was given as a man when I started to work artistically in South America and in India, both in daily life but also in the working processes, when students or even, you know, performers or collaborators would just look up to me simply because I was a Westerner, a white cis man coming from the West, coming with funding money, and was supposedly able to share this expertise and knowledge about contemporary dance. Even, you know, if mostly I was used to working collaboratively and like working on a more equal level, but often it would happen to me that people would address me as sir, and these things, yeah, were kind of made a big impression on me, and it was sometimes not easy to deal with that. Or also, like, in the bus, in the public transport in India, for example, how I, as a Westerner, as a white man, was often given the better seats.
So, you asked me, Chris, to talk a bit more about this history of human zoos and how it's informed the performance. When you came to me originally with the idea for this piece, you told me you wanted to make a piece with a white male body as a centerpiece, and to create a performance essentially that reflects kind of autobiographically about your own position as a white cis male, and that reflects on white masculinity. And part of the way that the piece does that, of course, is that in the process of making the piece, we brought in these outside eyes, women, and mostly women of color, and myself, to witness and observe and respond to this white male body on the stage. And so when you came to me with this idea, of course, immediately the thing that came to mind was this history of human zoos, this history of exhibition and display, and specifically the way that it has affected people of color. So with the rise of colonialism in the 19th century, there was this widespread trend of essentially displaying quote-unquote natives and quote-unquote savages in these public exhibitions, in these human zoos that often toured around Europe or the United States. And these were these public spectacles where people of color were, sometimes put in cages or behind fences to be looked at and observed and witnessed by this white audience. And the purpose of these zoos, it's no coincidence, obviously, that this phenomenon emerged during the rise of colonialism, because they essentially functioned as a way to construct and establish a difference between the colonizer and the colonized, the white body and the brown body, and also a way to affirm European superiority and agency and control over the bodies of colonized peoples. So when we were working on this, and as I was thinking about this, obviously I kept thinking about, okay, you know, how different this setup that we have going is from that history, and how it contrasts in some ways and compares in other ways. Yes, of course, in the performance there's this whole idea of witnessing, of observing, of responding, but the differences are very stark also, in that you have a white male performer on stage, Matthew, who is there of his own volition. He is not coerced to be there, he's not forced to be there. We are all getting together of our own volition freely. So it's a very different thing, obviously, from this history. And this history where people of color were very often, not in every instance, but in most instances, were coerced to perform in some sense for this white audience, and were exploited and abused and subject to abuse by the white gaze. So one thing that we tried to do working on this performance was to address this history of coerced and coercive display and exhibition. And I tried to do that in the text. You also address it in the choreography, and bring that history in so that the performance remembers those absent bodies and those absent histories, which not everybody knows about. People of color know about this history, but often white Europeans, white Americans aren't aware of this history. So hopefully the performance recalls those histories as well. So you asked me, Chris, to talk a bit about the process of making this piece and my experience with the process, and specifically the kind of agency that I exercised in participating in this piece. And that was really interesting. The process of making this piece was really interesting for several reasons. The first is that I'm a writer and I spend my time in solitude with language and text. And I've thought and I work with and address the themes that this performance deals with. So things around race and gender, being a Black woman myself and having that inform my experience in very deep ways. But what this piece gave me, which I really appreciated, was to think about these concepts, things like whiteness and masculinity and so on, through the body, through choreography and movement. And this was a really new experience for me to process or address these issues in a very visceral way, literally through the body. So that was definitely one of the highlights of working on the piece. The second part of the process that was really interesting is the fact that, and this is something I only realized well into the process, is that it's a performance, a choreography that reverses the normative relations of looking. I mean, if we consider the history of looking, of gazing, the power of looking has historically been ascribed to the white male body. Even slavery, when we think back to that history, the theorist Bell Hooks makes this really interesting observation that slaves were often punished for daring to look directly at a slave master, for instance. So there's a lot of power invested in looking. And this performance is really interesting and different in that it very consciously makes a white male body entirely vulnerable to my gaze as a Black woman. It's a body that I can direct to do what I want it to do. It's a body that is exposed naked to me. It's a body that I can mull over and contemplate and critique and objectify. So the performance invests my gaze with this agency in a way that normally is not really accessible to women and particularly women of color. And yeah, so this I think was a big part of also what makes this performance really interesting to me. And the way that it makes me realize that actually how often I'm subject to this objectifying, exoticizing, othering gaze as a woman of color moving through white spaces in Europe and the United States, in whether it's Switzerland or Germany or wherever. This is also something that one of the outside observers, Monica, mentions. The way that as a body of color you are subject to this gaze, and that this gaze has a history. I mentioned the human zoos and how that history of bodies of color being exposed to a white gaze is really powerful and really deep. And so I think the performance is very subversive in that way, in the agency that it invests this body of color with. Ain't got no father, ain't got no brother, ain't got no children.